Good evening and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Hundreds of protesters descended upon Charlottesville, Virginia earlier this month for a Unite the Right rally, a recently emboldened white nationalist movement in the United States. The rally attracted other more traditional groups of white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and the Ku Klux Klan. Heather Heyer was protesting these groups when she was killed by a car that rammed into a crowd of counter-protesters intentionally. The events in Charlottesville have been followed by a nationwide discussion about the removal of Confederate statues around the U.S., as well as a debate about protected free speech. On this episode of Local Motion, KVNF News takes a look at the issue of racism locally. You'll hear from the Grand Junction chapter of Black Lives Matter about their response to KKK flyers being distributed in the area. You'll hear from people who attended a vigil in Montrose for the protester who lost her life in Charlottesville, Heather Heyer. And we'll hear from history professor Stephen Schulte about the history of the Ku Klux Klan in western Colorado. We begin with some participants of the vigil and march that took place in Montrose on Tuesday, August 15th. Around 30 people gathered and silently walked down Main Street to speak out against racism and honor Heather Heyer, as well as two troopers who died in Charlottesville in a helicopter accident, Jay Cullen and Burke Bates. Here's Karen Winkle, the pastor of Community Spirit Church in Montrose, to talk about why she participated in this march.
It's easy for those of us in a community so far removed to feel that that's something that's happening somewhere else and isn't related to us, but it is. We share identity as citizens of this country, and we need to be concerned about what's happening in other places. And you know, it's obvious by looking at a crowd that's gathered that we care about this, and we want to be sure that we've participated in conveying our grief of the loss of life, but also it's not overt, but obviously we care about what's happening in Charlottesville and want to participate with those around the country that are gathering, expressing concern.
Do you think that there are issues around race in this area that need to be out in the open and addressed and more?
You know, even if we were a community that was 100% white, we would have to address these issues because we are all living with various levels of racist attitude and are the recipients, the inheritors of white privilege. So every community has to deal with this, no matter its complexion. This is part of what's being made clearer in Charlottesville is that we can't pretend that there aren't things in play, and that as a nation we have to now look at what we might not want to look at. Someone who was speaking recently on one of the network interview show said, you know, what we have is really a basement in the house, this old house that is the United States, and nobody wants to go down in the basement, but we have to. We have to go down there to deal with what's there, because the things that are in play are not going to go away, and we can't say, well, let's just get along. That's the attitude of the privileged, to say let's get along. We need to listen to the people who are telling us that they are experiencing prejudice and hate and bias. We need to believe them when they tell us that.
My name is Russell Evans, and the reason that I came to the vigil today was mostly because I'm brokenhearted. And to me, I feel like we're in times where it would be wonderful to hear the president say different things and to act in a different way, and for our country to say different things and act in a different way. But ultimately, like, I can't force them to do a certain thing. And the true power in these times is being able to know in our hearts that we're doing the right thing and that we're standing up for what's right. And that's why I'm here. I fully anticipate people disagreeing with me or getting mad at me for honoring the death of a nonviolent protester who was resisting something that most of our grandfathers in this country also resisted in World War II. And I heard the mayor of Boston say the other day, "We welcome your free speech, but we do not welcome your words to incite violence." And so that's where I draw the line. If somebody has the crazy notion that white supremacy is okay. There's nothing that I can do to change their mind, unfortunately. But we don't have to tolerate that publicly. And it's not as if we can legislate against that, for example. But I think that ultimately our job is to stand against that and say, you know, that's not okay. That's not socially acceptable. And I'm here. And I know that this is wrong. And I know that deep in your heart, you know it's wrong too. And so this brings up another thing that I think is really important right now, which is it would be really easy for all of us as citizens to say, I wish that our democratically elected representatives would solve this problem. But that's a misinterpretation of democracy. Democracy is in the streets. Democracy is what the people want to uphold. And so if we as a nation decide to turn a blind eye to something like this and not to have a vigil in the streets in accordance to it, then we're going to turn a blind eye and we're going to allow these things to continue to happen. On the other hand, if lots of us take to the streets and say this isn't okay, and we're here, we're present to say this is not okay, then law enforcement is more likely to prosecute those who commit hate crimes, and juries are more likely to convict those who commit hate crimes, and racists are less likely to speak up publicly because it's not socially acceptable. And so I really feel that for better or worse, this is an opportunity to step into our power as citizens to say, this is not okay, and we're going to stand up for what is right.
Do you feel like some of these white supremacy groups and the Nazis that are coming out for rallies are feeling emboldened or supported by our current president?
It's a tempting thing to go down that path and say President Trump is to blame, and I don't think he's helping the situation. But I think ultimately it boils down to what have we done as citizens to stand up against racism over the last 20 years, even when Barack Obama was president. What have we done as citizens to stand up against bullying or imperialism or a myriad of other things? And one of the ironies, just to bring this to a very local level, I'm really excited about the Before You Hate, Think of Kate campaign going on in Montrose for suicide awareness and bullying, because that's about citizens saying, no, this isn't okay. You can't be a bully anytime, anywhere. And what I would really like to see is those same people on the street corner saying bullying isn't okay anywhere, and white supremacy is kind of the greatest form of bullying there is. And so it's across the spectrum. And I think the efforts of whether it's anti-bullying campaigns or anti-racism campaigns are all really important. And so some of the advice that one of my friends had said, Victoria Chance, she said, whatever your heart breaks the most over, put your energy towards that, because you can't do it all, but find that thing that hurts the most. And today, and with what's been going on in Charlottesville, that's what breaks my heart the most. So that's why I'm here.
While most people associate the Ku Klux Klan with the South, historically, the organization was widespread throughout America, including in the West. During the 1920s, the KKK achieved a high water mark of influence in Colorado. In fact, during the 1920s, Colorado had the second highest per capita number of Klan members in the country, behind only Indiana for most Klan members statewide. KVNF News spoke with Colorado Mesa University history professor Stephen Schulte and asked him why Colorado was home to so many Klan members during the 1920s. Conditions back then were remarkably similar to now in terms of immigration and rapid cultural change.
It's the World War I era and post-World War I. It was a time of tremendous change, fast pace of change in America. I mean, that's always commented on when you study the late teens and 20s. America was getting involved in international affairs in a big way, and a lot of people were unsure that that was our destiny, kind of sounds like today, I guess. Should we be shaping the world, or should we build Fortress America and hide here? In that era, of course, we trusted the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans to keep the riffraff out. But there were a lot of immigrants coming in from Southern and Eastern Europe. Many of them were Jewish, of Jewish ancestry. Many of them were Catholic. And, of course, old stock American Protestants were worried about that. Are we losing our groundings here in America, in the United States? Are we changing too fast? I think that bothered a lot of people. It made the message of hate and 100% Americanism of the revived Ku Klux Klan, I think, appealing to a lot of people, maybe to many people who would normally not hear it.
The Klan was active in politics throughout Colorado, and especially in the Western Slope at this time.
They weren't going after and doing violence to too many minorities. What they did want to do is take over politically, and they did that very well for a very short period of time throughout Colorado, taking over the Colorado legislature in 1924, electing a Klan-affiliated governor, electing at least one U.S. senator who at least owed his election to them, so owed some allegiance back to them. They took over the Grand Junction City Council in 1924. They certainly controlled the police force for a short period of time in the fair city of Grand Junction, which was about 8,000 or 9,000 people then, by the way. They were active in Crawford or Hotchkiss, Cedar Edge, probably all the other small towns as well. They wanted to push an agenda, a political agenda, enforce prohibition rigorously, enforce whatever they could, and this is sort of vague, but 100% Americanism, harass Catholics. They could find Catholics and target them, occasionally burn a cross, you know, on a church lawn, that kind of thing. Scare people into conformity with their pure American agenda. Certainly they were against the tide of immigration.
Throughout its history, the Klan has shown an ability to lie dormant and then resurface according to its popularity and the cultural leanings of the time. This pattern leads some historians to think that incidents like the recent unrest in Charlottesville, Virginia, indicate an upswing in Klan acceptance and activity. Schulte said that some Klan activity is starting again in Grand Junction.
Well, I think if we look at American history, at least in terms of using the Klan as our model hate group, there's at least three or four periods of Klan activity. The first Klan we all know about after Reconstruction, the Klan that we've been talking the most about here in the 1920s until about World War II, but certainly their period of influence was in the middle part of the 1920s. The 70s saw a revival of the Klan, first, though, really in the 60s. And of course, that was a response to the successes of the civil rights movement, the backlash against it. And it continued in the 70s. In the 70s, our economy crashes. Inflation was wild. 20 years of economic growth after World War II, 20 to 25 to 30 years, is starting to be questioned, and scapegoats are sought. And of course, a lot of them would be immigrant and non-whites in terms of the target of the scapegoating. And then today, you know, we have all of these same issues. Flares around here, there's been a lot of flyers appearing, you know, in Walmart parking lots under windshield wipers with nasty things on them. Huge outbreak of it here, even on campus in 2001. I have a collection of documents that somebody gave me dealing with that one. And, you know, it happens from time to time. And it seems to go, as you nicely said it, dormant. But it's back right now, as we all know.
You're tuned into Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. In February, and again in July of this year, several homes in Grand Junction and the surrounding area received promotional materials from the KKK. The Mesa County Sheriff's Office says it received several complaints from homeowners who found flyers and Ziploc bags at the end of their driveways and mailboxes that encourage people to love their race and stop homosexuality and race mixing. I called the number on the flyers to speak with a member of the KKK and to get their perspective and heard this message. A warning to our listeners, the following is disturbing.
At night for the KKK, then we see white patriots such as James Fields Jr., age 20, taking his car and running over 9 communist anti-fascists, killing one nigger lover named Heather Heyer. James Fields, hail victory. It's men like you who made the great white race strong and will be strong again. For more info on joining the Klan, leave name and number for area code or go to our website at kkknights.com. It's kkknights.com. Always remember, if it ain't white, it ain't right. White power.
The Grand Junction chapter of Black Lives Matter, formed in November of 2016 in response to racism in Grand Junction, as well as the high numbers of unarmed African Americans being killed by police in the United States. They wanted to work with local police, business owners, and officials to protect people of color, help them feel safe, and educate and share stories with community members about racial hardships they experience. They held a community meeting last Wednesday to discuss a possible response to the flyers distributed by the KKK in their area. Here's John Williams, co-founder of Black Lives Matter Grand Junction, to talk about what happened at the meeting.
And so we were having a community meeting to talk about those flyers. What ended up happening was, because of the events of Charlottesville, Virginia last week, we decided that we were going to also talk about that incident in our community as well. And so we had a community discussion about KKK flyers, racial hardships, and the events that happened in Virginia. And we got over 175 people in attendance, and we basically just spoke about racism. We wanted to make sure our community members were able to speak about how they felt about the incident in Virginia, how they felt about the KKK flyers, how they felt about, they talked about city council. They talked about a bunch of different aspects about just overall how they felt Grand Junction was doing when it came to these incidents and how we responded. The people that were there kind of spoke that they wanted city council to have more representation in the sense of saying, we condemn white supremacy, we condemn neo-Nazism. Like, they wanted city council to be able to say those things. They also talked about how there's no good way that we can really find out who's doing these KKK flyers. They spoke about people being safe. They wanted people to, like, if somebody does knock on your door that you don't know, like, don't just immediately open the door. Like, make sure, like, you look through your peephole, you have a screen door in between you and the person. Because there was someone, I guess, going around handing out white nationalist flyers as well, we found out. And so they were saying, just, you know, be careful with that. They also spoke about rallying here if we needed to. We also talked about some couple of exercises about giving back to your people of color in your community to make them feel safe here, like having those open dialogues about racism so people will have a better understanding about how the other half lives here. And that way more people, because a lot of black people don't live here. Roughly 400 or so people are black that live in Grand Junction, Colorado, out of the 69,000 black people that live here in Grand Junction. And in Mesa County, there's roughly over 120,000 people. And of those people, only 1,200 or so of them are black. So it was just basically saying, like, we need to figure out why these people don't want to move here. What are our race relationships like? And, like, when those people come here, that they need to be able to feel safe. And that starts with dialogue.
Part of what you do when you meet is discuss experiences of racism that you may have had. Can you give us some examples of what that might be?
So when we meet, we usually talk about, because Black Lives Matter Grand Junction meets on the third Wednesday of every month at 6:30, and we always talk about what's going on in the country, actually, usually is how we start off. But when we first formed, we actually had people going around the room talking about aspects of racism in Mesa County, and a lot of them were teachers talking about students, saying that people of color, like students of color, they'll get teased or they'll be called names or they'll be treated unfairly in some kind of capacities. For instance, I had one of my hairstylists who recently moved away. Her kids are black, and they got made fun of for having like certain kind of hair care products that have weird names and getting treated unfairly because of those things. And I've had friends who get stalked by police officers a little bit. One of my friends has literally a collection of different police officers' cards that have stopped him just from walking up and down the street because he's black and he just gets stopped more so than his other friends do. We talked about, and those are considered microaggressions, so we're part of that racial hardship. And microaggressions is the better example of that is somebody saying, she's pretty for a black girl. That's considered a microaggressive statement because that we actually got reported to us at one of our meetings about how a black worker at one of the local grocery stores, somebody was going through her line and said they didn't want to, they wanted somebody else. And she was really confused by what that was. And she's like, okay, so, and then it later came out that this person, this customer, didn't want a black person to check them out. And the manager responded accordingly. But it wasn't met with enough disapproval. And as much as we don't have necessarily that amount of power yet to affect businesses, we do talk about those kind of racial hardships because, that's another reason people wouldn't want to live here is because they feel like they're not being heard or when something racist does happen that they're not being supported enough by their company.
I find having conversations myself with people about race and also just observing what's going on right now in this country, it's an issue, obviously. I still see a lot of people saying it's not a problem. Everyone's just making a big deal out of a bunch of stuff that doesn't. It's just not an issue. We shouldn't be making such an issue about it. And then, there's quite a few people making points on the other side of that. I'm wondering if you've experienced that just having started a chapter of Black Lives Matter of people sort of responding, why do you need that? What's that for? So, we don't have a problem with that here, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I've heard that in some aspects. A lot of the black people that live here don't actually speak up to the racism that happens here because they're severely outnumbered. And so the thing about it is, and I guess you could maybe say it's a direct result of having a black president for 8 years, but there was a point, it's almost like a societal shift to where black people and people of color at large felt like they could actually speak up and say, hey, by the way, even though this has been this way for centuries, I really don't appreciate you treating me differently because of my race. And then they had examples of it. So, by the way, I've lived in the city my whole life, but there's been, a Confederate flag flying above my house for all these years, and I finally feel like I have enough of a voice and enough of a backing for my country at large to say, hey, I want to take that down. And so when people are like, there's not racism in Grand Junction, which our previous mayor had said that, actually at one of during city council elections, she actually said that. And it was really disappointing to hear because racism does exist on the Western Slope. It's very prevalent here. It's not necessarily people getting lynched from trees, but it's how people are treated. And so to defeat that completely is to acknowledge that those things are happening. When people say, I feel like people are making a big deal out of nothing, what they mean is it's not directly affecting them because it isn't usually. A lot of people who say that are not a person of color. The majority of people who say that are not people of color. So they don't understand why people are creating such a ruckus. When in reality, to truly have equality means that we need to face these issues head on. And it doesn't mean saying we're trying to change the world. It's saying hey, that's racist. So let's not do that. There's more people who acknowledge that we have a problem and are trying to solve it. So it's honestly just a number count. When people rally, they want to see how many people actually agree with a cause. Seeing 5,000 people marching against white nationalists, marching for equality, implies in a smaller city, you're like, wow, people really, this is important to people, and it makes people stand up.
There's a lot of discussion right now, too, about what it means to be a white ally in this movement. Can you talk a little bit about that? and what really what that means to you?
Allies are important because they are the ones who are usually in the majority. I guess they're in the majority, and so their opinions, their votes, their decisions, the way they speak about these issues really matter, because usually allies are the ones who end up changing each other's minds. Because like somebody part of an oppressed group can't befriend every single person in the majority, so it's up to the majority to help understand what's going on in our country so that decisions can be made to eventually help better the minority group's oppression. So we have a lot of allies in our group. And actually what I've noticed is that what's really great about this is that now when people go out into the community, they recognize when these things are happening. I've even seen on social media for Grand Junction alone that people are actually speaking up against the tyranny that's happening in our country. Like, they use the rhetoric they've learned. Like, they use words like people, they'll use the phrase like people of color, and they say, I acknowledge my own privilege because of A, B, C, and D. Like, and it's really great because these are allies. These are white individuals who are speaking out against racism in their own community on social media, to their friends. They have a voice. Like, they're using the voice and the information they've learned to really make a difference. Because that's how it's going to change. It's not going to necessarily be a rally. It's going to be people talking to people. Individuals talking to their families, their kids, their teachers, their spouses.
I want to thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me about these issues. Can you
tell
people how they can be involved?
Well, people can be involved, like, in fighting racism specifically on an individual basis. But if they want to get involved in their local community groups, like, there is the Hispanic Affairs Project in town here, which fights, like, immigration issues. And they're one of the biggest Hispanic organizations on the Western Slope. On top of the fact, you can join your Black Lives Matter, your local Black Lives Matter. So if they want to join and get involved that way, like, we always have events where people can come, meet each other. We recently threw an event called Meet Your Invisible Neighbors, which invited a bunch of different minority groups to the same place to be able to get to know one another in a really positive way. And it just was to talk and eat. So, like, there's plenty of ways that people can get involved. Like, we will throw up the rallies and protests and demonstrations when we need to, but we're about building community with every member of the community.
This is Allie Lightfoot for KVNF.